So my name is John August. I'm sitting here talking with Jay Duplass, the writer and director, co-writer and co-director of many movies, including Puffy Chair, Baghead, Cyrus,
yes,
and other films
soon to be released. Yeah.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
You'd emailed me about 2 weeks ago in response to a post we had about Kickstarter, and my assistant Matt had gone to visit this Kickstarter campaign thing where they were talking about sort of how to raise money for indies on Kickstarter, and you're raising money for a feature that you're doing on Kickstarter.
Yes, I directed my first documentary, and it's called Kevin, and it's basically a doc about my hero from my college days in Austin, Texas, who was a musician, kind of like wildly creative and inspired person who disappeared in 1995. And I always sort of scoured the internet and newspapers wondering what had happened to him, what was going on. And basically a few years ago, I was a little soul sick and I decided I need to reconnect. And so I went searching for him. And I ended up finding him, and that's what the documentary is about, is what had happened to him, what he's been doing, and sort of, this magical thing that happened where we ended up traveling, and he ended up sort of reigniting his dream.
Cool. So how far were you into the process of, putting together a documentary when the idea of, Kickstarter, the idea of sort of, involving other people in the process this early on came in?
Yeah. Well, it was, I actually already premiered like a rough cut at South by Southwest this year. I thought it was the perfect place to release the film. He's a musician and, South by Southwest is kind of one of our, homes, and, it was sort of a perfect combination. But what ended up happening at the film festival is Kevin played his first gig in 15 years, and it was really kind of a magical, explosive experience. Film festivals, they often tour other film festivals. They got really excited about it, and they said, hey, we'd love for your film to come, but we'd also love for Kevin to come, too. We're not sure we can pay for him to fly there. We're not sure how we could do it, but we feel like in an ideal world, Kevin will be traveling with your film. So this thing unfolded in front of us, which was essentially that film festivals are starting to become Kevin's comeback tour. And so, as most people know, making a documentary is kind of like a losing money proposition. I was, pretty in the hole with the film already. Putting him on tour was definitely going to take some more money. And somebody that I was working with suggested Kickstarter, and they had actually read your article, and they were kind of showing me around and just introduced me to the website for the first time. So I got really excited about it because I think, for me, it was a very easy thing for people to latch onto, like the idea of, really helping this guy reignite his dream, and for the film itself to do that. And I was hoping that, some of the fact that some people know who I am might bring a little bit more attention to him.
Yeah, it's important to bring up that, people do know who you are just based on your credits and the movies you've made. And you started with these really small, tiny little movies, and you've gone to bigger and bigger movies. Was there ever a sense of getting back to something smaller in trying to do this documentary?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. The documentary for me was, partially about just reconnecting with Kevin personally, because it was in a lot of ways like a life experience first, but it had always been my dream to sort of like show Kevin to the world. And, the way I figured I'd do it was with the documentary eventually. But most importantly, I just started working in the studio system, and I feel really lucky and blessed to be able to make the kind of movies we want to make in the studio system. But that is a very different process than when you're making a $15,000 feature film with your brother, acting like cavemen. Basically, you're just kind of coming around, pushing lights around, and you don't really talk about things that much. You just create, and the studio process of filmmaking is, there's an enormous amount of talking. There's an enormous amount of intellectualization. And so, it came at kind of the perfect time when I just kind of wanted a break. And, this film, I didn't even, have to talk about it with anyone. It was literally Kevin just moving through the world, taking on this journey and me being there filming it. It was really kind of like a refreshing purist exercise.
I've definitely experienced that sense that trying to work in the studio system, they want all the questions answered before anything ever begins.
Yes.
And
yeah.
So there's no sort of exploration. There's no sort of like, well, we'll figure that out at the moment.
Yeah.
Everything needs to be sort of completely figured out, you know, 3 years in advance. And
then so
maybe
true.
We'll make the movie. And
yeah.
So the process as a writer is you're trying to answer all these questions on the page, and eventually, like, I can't put any more on the page. I can sit down with you and talk you through sort of what this is.
Yeah.
But I can't literally answer any more of your questions here.
Yeah. And even the process of getting it on the page can be very laborious if you have to intellectualize it the whole time. I mean, it sounds whiny when you're whining about, you know, oh, you know, the studio that wants to pay me money to make a piece of art wants to talk about it too much. But the way that my brother and I have been talking about it is it's as if you're going to, like, write a love letter to someone you're in love with, but before you write that letter, you need to consult all of your friends and all of their friends about what you should write in that love letter. And after you talk about it for about a year, by the time it's time to write that love letter, sometimes you just don't want to write it anymore. You know what I mean? You've already expended the energy in a weird way that hasn't gone onto the page. And so that's, I think, part of, like, what our challenge is, you know, in the studio system, is to try and figure out ways to keep that fresh and to make sure that you're protecting, you know, you're accommodating everyone's needs who are giving you money so that we can have our kids and have health insurance and all that stuff, but also to protect what we're doing.
I remember in fifth grade, that's when they first started taught us to write our research papers. And so they'd make you do an outline, and the outline had to be in, like, this incredibly, like, sort of strict format.
I remember that.
And
Roman numerals breaking down into Arabic numerals, breaking down into lowercase letters. Oh yeah, I went to Catholic school.
And by the time you get through this outline process, you have no desire to actually write this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you've created this sort of blueprint for a building you don't want to build anymore.
Yeah.
And you know, writing is meant to be sort of a process of exploring and discovery, and it just takes all that out of it.
Yeah.
You've probably encountered some of this too, where the process of, before you're even allowed to start writing, you have to sort of go and you pitch your movie. And, like, you get a pitch. You have to be able to explain, like, what a movie's like.
Yeah.
I always describe a pitch as being, like, you just saw the best movie ever and you want to convince your best friend to go see it. Like, that's natural. And that's always been a part of the process. But I say recently, the last couple of years, it feels like they want all those questions answered before you're even allowed to, like, put pen to paper.
Yeah.
And so they want these detailed outlines of things, and you do lose any desire to actually write this because you feel like you've already written it.
Right. And, well, it doesn't allow for the process of discovery, which I think is, you know, part of our artistic process, is you're literally, it's unfolding before your eyes. You're figuring things out about yourself, about your characters. And, you know, that journey, I think the process of writing is about the process of that journey of discovery. And if you're not allowed to have that journey, then, you know, I think it's harder to make the art feel really fresh and, you know, off the cuff.
Yeah. One of the most fun experiences I had over the last couple of years was shooting this little web pilot we did called The Remnants. It was during the strike, and so we shot this little 10-minute pilot for a comedy series. And what was most fun about it is no one was telling us what we could or we couldn't do.
Yeah.
And we were just, if we completely screwed up, fine. Like, there weren't, the consequences were much, much lower.
Yeah.
The rewards were lower too. We could never actually get figured out.
Yeah.
And so it keeps coming back, the idea of doing The Remnants as a TV show or doing it as a web series,
nice,
doing it some different way. You know, we could do it as a Kickstarter thing, and we could sort of, you know, draft people in and sort of create a series that way. We talked to Hulu, we talked to iTunes, and there's probably a business model to cobble together for it.
Yeah.
But it's always been the question of, it, is it the best use of my time
to
be doing that? And is it the best use of your time to be working on this documentary? Does that ever come into your...
Financially, it is absolutely not the best use of my time. It's about the worst use of my time that I could think of financially. But for me, this project in particular was like a calling. It was absolutely like something that I felt I had to do. For me, for him, and just, it just was something that I felt like needed to be in the world, and I was ready to do it. But yeah, I think that is, I think another question to be asked too, because I'm also interested in different forms of media and different lengths and stuff like that. But, you know, whenever you're tackling something like you guys were tackling, you're also tackling reinventing the wheel of how things can be exhibited. And you know, because, you know, we have very narrow pipelines in our industry. You know what I mean? It's the 90 to 120 minute feature pipeline. And that's pretty much it. That's pretty much the only pipeline. And so, you know, it's going to take a lot of pioneers to reinvent different ways and different modes of, you know, not only exhibiting but creating stuff. And I think that for me is really where I start to question, because I have, Mark and I have tons of ideas for stuff, but it's like, wow, where does this fit currently? And we would love to live in a world where this has a place to fit and we can see that we could potentially create an avenue for this to be. But once you go down that road, you're more turning into a media mogul than a screenwriter or a filmmaker.
Yeah, know? That's been one of my frustrations with this, the new indie model, is that it's supposed to be like, oh, and then you're going to release it yourself. And like, you know, oh, you have to have your release plan figured out before you even started. It's like, well, then you're supposed to be a master of like 100 things rather than like the 10 things you're supposed to be a master of.
That's already way hard enough.
Absolutely. You know. Like, you know, most people have no business like writing and directing, and now they're supposed to like write and direct and market and release and figure out much more than they could possibly figure out.
It's really tricky. Yeah, it's a really tricky road. I mean, with the Puffy Chair, part of our exhibition deal, we went with Roadside Attractions for the theatrical because they were just really open and they wanted to, they're really cool guys, and we wanted to try stuff. And, you know, we ended up making our poster and making our website and making our trailer and making video logs and all this stuff. And people loved it, and it was really fun, and we were able to get it out there. But the downside of it is we kind of woke up a year later and realized that we'd become distributors. Mm-hmm. And we hadn't really created anything. And, you know, we're super prolific in the sense that we are brothers. We both are extremely committed. We make a lot of movies, but we had a year gap where we hardly worked on anything that was a piece of art. We were selling a piece of art, and so we had to kind of rein it in.
Yeah, that was my experience with the Nines as well, is, you know, we debuted at Sundance. We did our international debut. We finally came out, but, like, that whole process was just, was continually just, like, doing new stuff and sort of keeping this ball up in the air, and there was nothing new to sort of show for in that period coming out of it.
Totally.
Even in success, I mean, it was a frustration, but even with a movie that I was happy with, I was frustrated that there wasn't more to do afterwards.
It is amazing. I mean, even on Kickstarter with this campaign, it's a big commitment, you know, just like getting your website and getting your little video that you're going to show people what you're doing and kind of organizing your thoughts. It's like writing a grant, but more, you know, and not only that, but really contacting your friends and asking them to help you out. You know, I mean, it's been totally worthwhile on this project for me because I care so much about Kevin and you know, he's like 49 years old, and this really is kind of a last chance for him, and it's something that I've been thinking about forever. So I'm really just motivated by more humanitarian concerns than like promoting the film. I don't, you know, the film is a secondary concern to me. It's really more about like what the film can do for him. So in that sense, it's still appealing to me and exciting, but if it was just for a piece of work that I was doing, I'm not sure that I would be as fired up about it as I am.
Well, you say like talking to friends about things or asking friends for money, that's a weird situation too, is that like you're successful. I mean, and so I think the natural question, you know, when one of your friends gets an email from you, it's like, well, I know he's got $50. He doesn't need my $50 to do it. A friend of mine was talking about a mutual friend who was doing a photo exhibit, and the boyfriend had sent out like a you know, request for like, hey, check out my boyfriend's photo exhibit, and I, you know, and support it through Kickstarter, and like, we know this guy's a multimillionaire, so it felt really strange to be like, you know, be asked for a check for this thing. And you know, I guess we're used to being hit up for some of that stuff anyway. You're hit up for like stuff at your kid's school or
definitely
other charities, but Kickstarter doesn't feel quite like a charity. It's a thing that you're going to make that you're going to own.
And that you're going to own and you're going to promote. And I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I thought about that a lot, you know, because people were trying to convince me to do it. And I said, well, you know, I'm not a multimillionaire, but I do have money now. And, you know, even though I have already lost a lot of money on this project, like I could probably afford to do more it might get a little sticky. But, you know, I definitely could find a way to do it. So the way that I kind of worked around it, at least in my own mind, is, you know, I essentially gave prizes away. For instance, at the $25 level, I gave away a signed CD from Kevin and the signed DVD of the movie from Kevin and me. So, you know, essentially, it's almost repositioning Kickstarter as a distribution tool, because the documentary is a slightly odd length. It's just hard to distribute a documentary in general. I really wanted to promote Kevin's music and get that out there, and I didn't really have a way. And in a weird way, I found it to be essentially like a distribution tool. And that's that $25 level has become a very, very popular thing for most people who are also artists who are, you know, frequenting Kickstarter. That's what people are buying into. And then every once in a while, somebody who really loves me will drop $100 on there, you know, and it's obviously somebody who wants to support me and what I'm doing. But yeah, I think that was the way that I really got around it. And I think it's a cool thing too, because my main goal is just to get him out into the world and to get people to notice him. And it's almost like, you know, getting two birds stoned at once. You know, I'm able to raise some money to put Kevin on tour, but also to get the materials into the world.
Yeah. How old are you now?
I am 38. Had to think about it.
Yeah. I just turned 40. And in this last couple of years, I've been finding myself doing a lot of new things that aren't sort of like, you know, writing a big A-list screenplay, because they're new things.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when we were making Go, which was my first movie, it was all brand new. I remember like showing up on the set and like realizing, oh my God, all these trucks are here to make my movie.
Yeah.
And like, you know, every day was a huge process of discovery. And, you know, you write a bunch of movies and there's less discovery. There's less sort of new. And so, you know, I'm working on a Broadway show. I'm working on TV shows or other projects that I don't know what the answers are. And it's nice to sort of be the guy who doesn't know everything coming into the room.
I love that. That's been one of the most rewarding parts about this documentary. I know nothing about docs. I just know that I love them, but I have no idea how people program them, you know, what happens in that world. And not only that, just the process of shooting something where I literally have no idea what's going to happen. And that I'm getting to that point in my life already, even though we came to success later. I don't know. I definitely like to be challenged and like to be able to figure things out and try new things. So that's probably, to me, the most exciting thing about Kickstarter is I'm like, now I'm in that world and I'm looking at all these projects and I'm like, wow, you know, not only are there so many different kinds of pieces of art that are being generated there, that like, it's kind of coinciding with the fact that, you know, the internet is merging with your television, and like those pipelines we were talking about, there are just going to be so many more options and so many more variables. And it's just exciting. It's a really exciting time, and to be a part of I think what will be a giant media revolution in the next 5 years.
And what's I've come to accept over the last couple of years is that I probably won't be the person who I won't be that media revolutionary.
Right.
I won't figure it out. And actually my generation won't figure it out. I'm including you in my generation. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the people it's going to be like the 18 to 20 year olds who are like using it now, who just don't distinguish between different kinds of screens and have no memory of how it was supposed to be, who will figure out like what the next model is.
Because they won't be limited by our like rigid old minds.
Exactly. But I want to sort of keep my, at least a foot in that pool, just so that I'm not left out of it, so I can just see what it is.
So we can ride the wave of these young bucks.
Basically, I want to stay indie enough that I actually know what they're talking about and can sort of and see where it goes.
Yeah.
There's a fossilization that happens when you just keep doing the same stuff again and again. And there's ways to make, you know, big, successful four-quadrant movies over and over and over again, and there's nothing wrong with that.
But no.
It's not necessarily going to... It's hard. I find it hard to get out of bed every morning and work on one of those.
It's interesting that you said that, because for me, it was so fulfilling making this film that I started to get really excited. And I was like, how can I make more of these films? And my old rigid mind was like, well, I guess I'll have to sell a TV show, because that's the only way that like an odd length documentary is going to get distribution. I mean, it's literally, you know, I'll have to make 10 of them. But this freaking thing took me 3 years to make it. Yeah. You know, I wasn't working on it full time, but you know, I was luckily working in the studio system. It was kind of my off hours project. And I just realized after the end of 3 years, there's no way I can do it. Like, I could absolutely produce a TV series, but I don't want to be a producer. I want to be a part of the creation of this stuff. So I got really confused. And then when Kickstarter kind of came around, I realized, oh my God, I can just get this one movie out into the world. And after I went on Kickstarter, some other companies started contacting me about like how to position and distribute your own material. Doesn't matter what length it is, and you essentially use your mailing list. You bring it over from Kickstarter and you start to really connect with people. And you know, I think in the wake of, you know, what's happened with the record industry, you know, a lot of smarter younger people are telling me, you know, get out of your studio mindset. You know, collect the people's email addresses who want to be in touch with what you're doing, want to be connected to you, because essentially artist to fan relationship is the most important thing, and nobody really knows what's going to happen. The most important thing for you to do is just be in touch with them, and you might be selling your movies directly to them in 5 years.
It's that 1,000 true fans idea that most artists have basically 1,000 true fans who will
buy anything that they do.
Yeah, the bulk of their support through thick and through thin.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've kept the blog going, and I feel like, you know, through the nines I was able to connect with some of those people.
Yeah.
But maintaining that relationship is a challenge.
It is.
You know, some of the very smart bands are really good at doing that. About a year ago, Matt and I sort of had our sit down at coffee tour with a bunch of people who were doing stuff like this, and we sat down with a guy who works with Topspin, which is an artist label manager.
Bob. Great guy. He's one of the smart guys. He's been telling me what to do.
Yes. He seems like a very smart guy. And that sense of keeping track of who those people are and, you know, and keeping them in the loop, it seems right and seems crucial. I do it some with Twitter, but I don't do anything with the email addresses I have.
Yeah. I think for you and I, what's interesting is you know, we spend a lot of time in the industry fostering our relationships with certain studio executives. People move over, they switch around, you know, we stay in touch with those people. I think it, like you were saying, it'll be a lot easier for young people who are coming up, and it's like they have no access to the studio. That's how I was 7 years ago. So they will put all their energy into this. I think the tricky part for us is how can we maintain relationships with the studio, maintain relationships with our fans, still have enough time to be good dads and be good artists. You know, that's the really tricky part of the whole equation. But
yeah, and I try to make sure I'm never denigrating like the film industry that gives me my living. And so I get frustrated when I see, and I think it's sometimes misattributed, but like the John Sayles quotes of like, you know, I do like one for them and two for me. Like, you know, I do all that crap work for them so I can write the things I really want to write. And I don't want to ever be that guy.
No, and I think you and I are really lucky in the sense that what we create is accepted by the studio system. It might be difficult. It might be challenging. There's a whole other set of problems. But, like, we are one of we're two of the lucky ones to be able to create what we care about. And, you know, my movies, when they come out, I don't look at them and I'm like, boy, that would have been so much better independently. You know, I feel very strongly about them, and I feel like the studio helped me make that movie. But it is something, you know. It's nice to be able to break out and just like make a piece of art and not have to talk about it. You know, something can go down in 2 to 3 weeks that would normally take us, you know, 6 months in the studio system. It's nice to be able to have that variety, because it's interesting. I think the same way. I don't like to regard it as one for them, one for me.
Do you have any templates or like other people who've, you know, done the kind of stuff you're doing that you want to follow in terms of that split between indie? Or...
I think Soderbergh is probably a good model, because I think he loves both of his movies. He's not thinking one for them, one for me. I think he's thinking, I want to make this gigantic movie that's really fun and is going to happen at casinos. And I can't do that with my DV camera. And he needs a studio to do it, and he needs, you know, famous people in that movie. And then I think he has a movie like Bubble, and he's like, I want to make this weird thing, and I don't think a lot of people are going to like this movie, but I think the ones who are going to like it are going to love it. And so, you know, he can go away and make a really small one. And that's how I see my taste too, because I do have, you know, some smaller things. You know, a lot of people think, well, Mark and I used to make little indies and now we've moved to the studio, so now we're we've launched into the ether and we'll never go back. But we actually think a lot about, you know, a project will come up and we'll think, you know what, I don't think this is right for the studio system. I think actually it would be nice to have anonymous actors in this. I think it would lend to, you know, what this piece of art will be in the end. And it'd be nice to be able to, you know, take $75,000 and shoot it on DV over the course of 2.5 weeks.
Yeah. Soderbergh's definitely a person I had in my head for a model in terms of trying to do both things. And I feel like he's always, you know, experimenting with what's the way to do that. And even the movies that I've got that have been really frustrating, is like little movies that have been very frustrating at times.
Yeah.
I can at least see like why he was curious. I can see like why he made the experiment.
Yeah.
And while it seems weird to consider him in the same breath, James Cameron, I think, is also essentially an indie filmmaker who just has like just ridiculous budgets, who's become so big that he can just sort of make new things whenever he wants to make new things. Yeah. He's not particularly worried at what, you know, about pleasing that guy with a nice suit.
Yeah, he's a very purely creative person, so much so that he's willing to create the technology as well as the story that, will, you know, they go hand in hand for him. But I know what you're saying. Yeah, he's not really thinking in terms of like, well, I'll make this a studio movie. He's just trying to make what he wants to make and trying to find the most appropriate way to do it.
Do you have any fear of success? There are times at which I wonder if I deliberately pick challenging things or sort of sabotage myself so that I won't have like the big breakout that changes everything. Like,
right.
I wouldn't trade places with James Cameron. I just wouldn't. I don't want that life.
I don't know if I think that it's probably in there for me. My brother is much more unabashed about, like, you know, striving and you know, really trying to get to a bigger place. I think I'm I don't know if it's so much of a fear of success, but I have a fear of just making a bad movie. Like, all I really care about is when I set out to make the film that I want to make, it's really important to me that I get to make it how I want to make it and that it's good in the end. And I'm probably almost too willing to give up money in order to get that, you know, because I want it so bad. And I'm kind of lucky in the sense that, like, you know, my wife and I live in Eagle Rock. We live in a tiny little house. Like, we don't really have needs. Like, my only real need is to, like, not make a bad piece of art. Because, you know, as you know, we spend so much time on it. And if something got, quote-unquote, ruined, that'd be the worst thing that could happen. You know, not the worst thing, but, you know.
Yeah, I have a giant fear of wasting time. Is that, like, you know, that I'm going to waste a year of my life working on something that it's not going to happen. And in writing life, that is the case sometimes, where, like, you know, I've sunk 6 months into doing something and suddenly it's not happening for reasons that were completely outside of my control.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, something indie and small that could happen or not happen, but at least fail quickly, is rewarding. That's why you see the tech startups, you know, like, you know, I can appreciate the excitement of that because, you know, you're going to work your ass off, at least it's going to happen, it's not going to happen, and you'll know.
You're going to know in a matter of months whether it's going to happen or not. Yeah.
Yeah. So, cool. Well, thank you very much for this conversation. It's a really nice bundle of things to talk about. And there's sort of high class problems. You know,
it is.
You know, like my studio career is not rewarding enough and therefore I'm doing this other stuff, but it's the things you don't think about when you're, you know, first starting out. I feel like this next generation of filmmakers coming in, that difference between, you know, staying indie and getting big is going to be kind of less relevant in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lena Dunham's been kind of friend. She did Tiny Furniture.
Great film.
Great. And now she's doing an HBO show and she's obviously scaling up very quickly. And,
yeah. That's very quick. Yeah.
And seeing what that becomes, I feel like there's not that difference for her. I mean, it's still the same process for her.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, I think that's important to maintain your process and who you are and what it is that you're trying to accomplish. And as long as you can do that within the studio system, it's gonna work out.
So on Kickstarter, where do we find your movie?
Look up a movie called Kevin.
Great.
By Jay Duplass, and you'll find it immediately.
And you have a promo video there, and it explains everything that you're trying to do.
Exactly, yeah.
Cool. Jay, thank you very much.
Thanks, John.